So we're going to start because it's 4 o'clock. Thanks for coming. I know if you're like me, I'm going to cover this for a minute. If you're like me, Sue, my wife, will verify, this is my prime nap time. So I'm really glad you're here and giving up your naps. Yeah, we have a hot day, minestrone soup for lunch, 4 o'clock session. So we're going to be a little bit active. But you don't have to, don't worry, I'm not going to make you write poetry from the heart and share it or anything like that. My name's Ron Dwyer-Voss, and for most of the last 25 years, I've been working in communities, all kinds of communities. I've been really fortunate. I started in urban communities in Chicago on the south side and then the west side. And then took a break and we came and lived in Holden for about a little under a year and a half. Kind of chilled out. Spent enough time on the streets of Chicago, you need to chill out. And then moved to California where I spent about 7.5 years working with rural communities in the western United States, which was fascinating. There's so many different types of rural communities in the western United States. And spent a few years in my own city in Sacramento doing this kind of work, and then for the last 4 years or so have been just on my own doing trainings and consulting with groups. And by this kind of work, I mean work with usually nonprofits or government agencies and sometimes churches that want to revitalize or restore community. And sometimes that's very specific around economic development and bringing back retail streets in urban neighborhoods so that there's jobs and people can shop in their own neighborhood. Sometimes that's been developing affordable housing that people can live in, both home ownership and rental. We've done community. When I was doing rural communities, we did a lot of community building around extending water and wastewater systems. And if any of you live in these very small rural communities, chances are USDA worked on your water system at one point, and people had to come together in a meeting and all agree on some things, because they won't give you money for a water system if you won't include the Olsons down the road because you had a feud with them. So before you could get a water system, you had to have a community. And I've loved the work. Love the work very much. So I also found that there's lots of different ways to do the work. I went through my kind of Saul Alinsky stage, sort of angry organizing, and was pretty good at it. won my battles, went head to head with Mayor Daley and won. But eventually watched that and watched friends who were doing social service work and realized there was a way to do this work that was a lot more invigorating and positive and led to less burnout and was more respectful of the communities that I was working with. It didn't mean I gave up certain organizing techniques, but the method is called asset-based community development, and that's what this session's about. And it's one that's been around a long time. The guys that put the name on it, Jody Kretzman, who folks know Jody Kretzman, comes to Holden a lot. I think he was on the board for a while. I think Ingrid, his wife, was on the board for a while. Him and a guy named John McKnight at Northwestern University sort of put that label on this type of community work. And we'll talk about it in a little bit, exactly what it is. A lot of it is what was on the slide as you walked in. It's just building community from the inside out instead of looking outside communities to say who out there can help fix us. And so we'll go more into that. But before we do, I'm going to make sure I get all the instructions. Ring bell, check kiosk. Okay. Stop 5 minutes early. Okay. Hang on. Make sure I do what Paul says. Okay, so The other sessions this week are along these lines. Today is about asset-based community development and that whole idea of building community from the gifts of the community. For me, it's also a very theological approach to community. Tomorrow's session is kind of a slice of that, which is essential in my view to it. Called If It's Rats, It's Rats, which is named after a story that I'll tell you tomorrow that a friend of mine wrote and experienced. But that one's a lot about approaching communities with open minds and open ears and techniques for doing that and some of the stuff that we have to check at the door in order to hear. Then we're going to talk about power, third day, and its role in all of this. What's good about it, what's bad about it, and how Christians and congregations can embrace power in a healthy way. After that, we'll spend a little time talking about a lot of the people who make this stuff happen or teach a lot of this stuff, community organizers. Since they got so much attention during the presidential campaign, we'll talk about the myths and realities and people who say they are, who I don't think they are, and people who label on things they aren't, and we'll just explore a lot of that. We have a lot of fun video clips of that one. And then last day, we'll finish up with what congregations can do with this stuff. So welcome any day, every day. They'll all be sort of self-contained, but there'll be a common thread through them all. Today, just because I can't do this every day, but I can't not do this. I want to do some introductions, because I can't just talk to people if I don't know who you are. Over the week, I'll get to know more people. So there's a particular way I want to do this, which is I would like you to pair up with somebody who you, my internet security is kind of upset that I haven't been online for several days. I want you to pair up with somebody who is not like your spouse or somebody you've known for 30 years. And spend a few minutes, and you're just going to find out these three things about them. Three of their gifts. One is a gift of the hand. A gift of the hand is a thing you can do, do or make. There's lots of people who do this who come to Holden. I'm not one of them. They banned me from the pot shop years ago. But then a gift of the head, things that the person knows something about or is really interested in learning, because that's a gift of our head too, an interest. And then the third one, a gift of the heart, their passions, cares, concerns. So I'll give you about 2 or 3 minutes for the first person to share their three of their gifts in these areas. You know, this isn't cataloging, so you don't need to tell all the gifts of the hand, but to find out one gift in each area that the other person has. And then I'll let you know, and we'll switch and give you a few minutes to for the other person to share their gifts. Is that clear?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're here. Again, find somebody that you didn't come here with. And what we're doing is we're sharing. All right, here we go. All right. We're going blind here, but we're going to stop. It's the worst part of the whole workshop is having to stop you from this wonderful conversation. How was that?
Good.
Like that?
Good.
So we're just going to really quickly go around and introduce our partner and tell one of their gifts. Again, this is not a cataloging thing. And you're going to be tempted to tell us where they came from, who they went to the prom with, all the things you just learned. You learned in 5 minutes. Think of all the things you learned about that person in 5 minutes. So I would say my friend was Erica, and one of her gifts as a gift to hand is cooking with a specialty halibut dish. And so now you would know that. Okay, so that's how we'll do it. Let's start over here.
Oh gosh, no, don't start with me.
Don't start over here, we'll start over here. You're gonna take a pass.
She was late
to the session.
I'm sure she had a good reason for being late.
She could just make
Who would like to start?
Well, here, I'll start.
Thank you.
My name is Lisa and this is Kara. And she's passionate about early language learners and languages. Right? Did I get that right?
Very cool.
Language learning.
All right. Why did you tell her?
I told her that I could make blueberry pancakes.
$10 billion. All right. Keep going.
This is Kit, and he has a gift of the heart and is passionate about refugees.
Okay.
And this is Joel, and he has great care for natural foods and things that are not chemical.
Always wanted to do that. Do you go up like where the orca whales come scratch
yes.
their belly?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, gotta talk to you later. Kayak, Puget Sound, tour guide.
Right, yes. And this is Jeannie, and among her many talents, she is a knitter.
A knitter.
Knitter. Oh. And is also majored in hospital chaplaincy. And
only tell one thing.
Oh, one thing, sorry.
Good save.
This is Sue, and you probably don't know anything about her. She's passionate about justice and her family, and she makes, quote, a mean chocolate chip cookie, and therefore I love her.
And it is. It is known throughout our neighborhood.
And this is Paul, and he's passionate about fitness and caring for oneself and others. And fitness as a way to keep not just the body healthy, but the mind as well.
In here, I thought he was passionate about me.
Oh. He probably was. She had to limit to one. Quick, let's move before this goes further.
I'm not either. This class is too hard.
You guys go.
This is Jack, and he's still very interested in history. Has been since college. All right.
This is Megan. She's interested in kids. Mm-hmm. Learning, helping them learn, finding ways to, that they can learn quicker and better and easier.
All right. Megan, kids. How about you guys there?
This is Will. He's interested in people.
Right here on Ellen, Will.
Amanda is interested in community.
And she's thinking, when is this session going to get there? We will.
This is Jean, and she has been to El Salvador and China, and she's passionate about finding ways that people can be helped.
This is Bob, and he wants to learn how to speak German, and he loves to sing Broadway music.
Tonight.
So there's a spot in the lift for you.
Yeah.
You don't know what that is. Well, somebody will explain it later. Okay, now we're warming up over here. We're going to get to you. Okay.
This is Jim, and he's
very skilled at planning and facilitating events, people, difficult situations.
Oh, like mediating?
Mediating.
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm gonna. Mediating. All right.
This is Jeff, very interested in the tension between science and religion.
Ooh, cool.
This is Mylon, and he's passionate about developing or the sense of neighborhood.
And Mylon.
And Liz has a passion for music. Plays the violin and piano. Well, plays. She's very modest. I suspect she's better than she's leading us to believe.
Interest in music, great.
Carol, and her passion is helping people, and it's to make their life better, whether they're little people or old people. And she does service projects for women.
Okay. What about little old people?
any kind of people. Okay. No matter where they come from or where they're going.
This is Harriet.
This is who?
This is Harriet.
Harriet, oh, right.
I'm Ozzie, really. But this is Harriet. And she is interested in knowing what really is up there. In the science.
On the other side.
In the other side. What is it really like? Instead of what we're hearing.
Wow. I don't even know what
to call it. You can't even put words to that.
Interested in mysteries? Or the mystery?
The mystery.
Up there. Or over there, or wherever it is.
Right?
Did you guys upstairs get a chance to do this? No, or you just don't want to talk to each other? Usually people upstairs don't want to talk to each other.
We were all kind of late.
I totally understand. Oh, you were late?
Yeah. Okay.
That's fine. Okay, so if we all lived in some geographic proximity of each other, same town or neighborhood, would we be able to do something? Is this a group of people who could get something done? Yeah. Could we do things for each other?
Mm-hmm.
There's some things we heard here. Could we support each other?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if we faced a struggle or some obstacle to our community life, is this a group of people that could probably take that on, based on, I mean, you just heard one of many gifts. Yeah. So, what would have been different about this exercise if I had asked you to get in pairs and share something you're not good at doing, something you don't know anything about, and things you don't care about? Or as a friend of mine calls it, what you suck at. And then said, please, you know, share for 3 minutes one way and 3 minutes the other way. What would have been different?
You'd be depressed.
You'd have felt negative.
We couldn't get anything done from it.
You what?
We're stressing on the negative, so we couldn't get anything done as a collective.
Yeah, the list up here wouldn't say this group can get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Other thoughts?
I wouldn't be interested in the people. I mean, I want to meet all these people now. I wouldn't have felt that way if it had been the negative.
Just heard the negative.
Right. How many of you, this sort of confessional time, would have found that easier, actually?
Oh, probably.
The self-critics in the room, like, oh, yeah, I can come up with a list like that. Three gifts? You know. Three flaws. I've got 39 flaws I can tell you about in 10 seconds. Well, that's a lot of what asset-based community development is about, is the difference between approaching a community from what's wrong with it or approaching a community from the gifts it can offer. And I'm talking about any community, but I'll tell you now, my experience is mostly with very poor, low-income communities that have been marginalized in some way or another. And, but they, just because they have some needs or deficiencies as communities that, you know, needs assessments and other people have defined for them and said, you don't have this, doesn't mean they don't have a bunch of other things. Who could have done the exercise of something you don't know about, something you don't know how to do, and something you don't care about? I mean, who could think of one thing from each of them? Right. So we all have that. And we all know in our lives, right, in our workplaces, in our churches, the same person who's a recovering alcoholic having difficulty in their marriage is this fantastic Bible study leader. Right? I mean, we all have both in us. And that's true for our communities, too. Asset-based community development is about looking at the half-full part of the glass of community. Community in any group of people who are coming together to relate, either voluntarily or involuntarily. And starting with skills, talents, gifts, rather than starting with deficiencies and needs. Most communities are defined first here. Has anyone had that experience or seen that happen? Can you tell me an example of that? Anyone who is nodding and saying sure?
Neighborhood with a high crime rate.
Right. They're defined by their crime rate. Right?
Kids at school who have an IEP or are labeled in some way with a disability.
Right. So you get your IEP, some kind of assessment, and that now is the first thing the teacher hears when they hear about the kid instead of all the other kids. Right?
How about a church without enough money? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. There's a Synods have a name for those, I can't remember, but they label them right away as sort of financially marginal. And then that becomes part of the identity. But philanthropic foundations are the great perpetrators in my mind of a lot of this. And trust me, I work with them. Most people pay me with money they got from philanthropic foundations. So for the mic, you know, this is not a blanket critique, but it's true that most foundations perpetrate this by commissioning and funding a particular kind of study of neighborhoods. Does anyone know what it is?
A needs assessment.
A needs assessment, mm-hmm. Yeah. Most nonprofits, when they're coming to work in a neighborhood, the most easy thing to get is funding for a needs assessment. Or funding to look at all the last 5 needs assessments that were done to see if they might be able to do something. And the great, how many of you ever worked for nonprofits or public agencies, especially nonprofits? Okay. So the great, how many of you ever had to raise money? Okay. So the great dance when you work in nonprofits and have to raise money, and especially if you're working in some sort of social change helping world, is because we do this so much, whether it's the evening news or the Ford Foundation, we say, give us money, and we'll work on this. We'll work on that high crime rate. We'll get it down. And then 2-3 years come up. You still got payroll to make. And so you go back for renewal to get your grant renewed. Now what do you have to say? You have to say, we made some progress, but it's still really bad. Nonprofits do this all the time. We've made some progress, but it's still really bad, so you need to give us money some more so we can keep working on these needs and deficiencies. So what's the effect of a community, on a community, what's the effect of just starting with focusing on deficiencies and needs? And notice I'm showing the whole glass here. It's not that these don't exist, just like in all of us, we have both. I'm saying asset-based community development talks about starting here because there's a particular set of effects and impacts and consequences of starting here. What might some of those be? If you look at a community starting with like that. This is a neighborhood's needs map that was done years ago. on a particular neighborhood using a needs assessment. Can people read this?
Yeah.
So, people seen this kind of thing? Where a neighborhood or community is described based on these problems?
Often there's a lack of empowerment.
Okay.
So sometimes people become dependent on the system.
Yes.
You know, and then you're not teaching the man fish. They're used to having the fish handed to them on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. If this is, if you live here, and this is the definition of your community, you're highly likely to not feel very empowered. Other impacts.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be very discouraging. You would look at a map like that and you'd say, oh man, this is just too overwhelming. I can't begin to cope. It's
right.
Hopeless.
So like Tom said that, you know, I don't want to meet these people.
Yeah.
All they talked about was problem. But now you there's all kinds of people you want to meet when you heard about GIPS. It's the same effect here. Here and then here.
If it were me, I would want to know exactly what they have done, what they have accomplished, and what's happening before they get another dime.
Okay.
Because
so that,
you don't hear that. They just want more, 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 but they don't tell you exactly how it's operating. And how much they have, and how much they've spent on what.
So when you see this map, you think, where's it going?
You got it.
Okay. Where are we going? I'm sorry, down here in that.
This kind of map sets normalcy.
It sets what?
The norm for this is our community, rather than saying, where do we want to go?
Yeah. Take some things that exist in the community and says that's the whole thing.
It seems like you're going to have to just tear it all down and build it up into what you want it to be instead of taking all the good stuff that's already there and kind of enhancing it.
Right. Yeah, and that's sort of related to the effect of overwhelming. Right? You look at this and you're like, what are we going to do with this? Now plop a church in there. Where do you start? Where do you go? So those of us who spend years working with these models and trying to work with communities who've been labeled, and by communities, I don't just mean physical communities. This definitely people who work with young people have found this model particularly helpful, and lots of other labeled people. This asset-based community development approach has been used heavily in communities of people developmentally disabled. Because, again, they're seen for what's missing and not what they have to offer. And here's sort of the list that a lot of us are agreed on of the consequences of the needs map. Eric, you talked a little bit about the disempowerment, that we are deficient. Those of us who've worked in poor neighborhoods have met people who start to believe it. Just like a child who maybe has told so many times that they're stupid, eventually they're gonna believe it. Local relationships are damaged. Why is that? You go back to thinking about the needs map, starting with needs and deficiencies. Why are relationships damaged?
Not only do you think you're deficient, but you think your neighbor is too.
Yeah. So why do I want a relationship with them? They might be part of the crime rate. Most of the money comes into communities for programs, often narrowly defined. Economists, I know, Kit, you've done some economy stuff. Money that comes in through programs, narrowly defined programs, does not circulate well. So it's really hard when you're doing economic development to take money coming into communities on needs and build some sort of self-perpetuating economy out of that. This is a big one. Money gets directed towards professional helpers and not residents. There's nothing wrong with professional helpers. I'm married to a wonderful one. But the needs map says that's where you start. You get the professional help first. In the late 80s, at Northwestern University, Jody Cutson and I talked about, John McKnight, did a study of a neighborhood on the west side, a very poor neighborhood. The median family income of four was $12,000 a year. which I guess was more in the 80s, but still wasn't much. But that what they did find was when they added up all the money that came into that community through a hospital that was there, through social workers, through service programs, through foster care, through food stamps, through all those systems that came in through professionals, it was $30,000 a person. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a devastated, boarded up, vacant lot community. So what could have happened if some of that money would have gone to residents so they could create an economy? This one, we place focus on leaders who magnify deficiencies. These guys usually find themselves on TV. They're often their pastors, but they're in every poor community. Sometimes they're activists who their entire leadership style is dependent on highlighting to the mainstream what's wrong with why this community is bad and why they need more attention. And that's the kind of leadership that the needs map supports and promotes. And so a lot of good inherent building leadership that creates things is pushed away by these kind of leaders. Failure and dependency on systems is rewarded. Community gets a poor self-image and hopelessness abounds. So I spent some time on this just because a lot of times those of us in the church, we think, we want to help people, we want to meet needs. And this is to say, let's back up a second before we go meeting needs, because it can actually be hurtful to start with needs, or it can at least reinforce damage already done. There's another way. So this was the same community, same assessment, asked other questions too, and they made a different map. And you can see these in a whole lot of maps that specialize in libraries and churches and stuff, and a book called Building Communities from the Inside Out. It's green, it's in the bookstore. But look at this community. What's your reaction to this map?
Possibilities.
Possibilities.
Yeah.
Positives.
Connections.
Connections. There's another one in here.
Resources.
Resources. Right. Other thoughts as you look at this map? It's the same place. Yeah, everybody's there.
Yeah, everybody's there.
It's very inclusive. When Kretzmann and McKnight and Northwestern first started putting this together and calling it asset-based community development, it came from going out across the country and sending grad students, I'm sure, to most of these places, and to places where things were working, to see. And we're always looking for replicable models, and what's the silver bullet, and what they found was there wasn't. Everything's contextual, which those of us who in the church and pay attention to relationships and community know. But they did find that there was two common denominators in communities where things were working, regardless of income, racial makeup, history of the community. One was that these communities where things were working, where things were happening and being created, were communities that were looking at themselves this way. They were starting with their assets. Sometimes they were using their assets to address the needs issues. There was a great saying that came out of a community in eastern Canada. There was a fishing village that had been devastated by changes in the economy around their fishing. And so rather than, well, they did for a while sort of mope about that, and unemployment went high, and it got rough. And then they finally decided they had to go about things in a different way. And so they said, we're motivated by what we don't have to use what we do have to get what we want. motivated by what we don't have to use what we do have to get what we want. And so that, for them, the only value in a need was that it gave them some motivation. But then, to get where they wanted to go, somebody had talked about, you know, going somewhere in the future, they used what they had. So that was the first common denominator they found at Northwestern, was that communities where things were working, where things were being built, where things were moving in a positive direction, were places where people were starting with strengths and assets. The second was, and I don't know if anyone has really studied this phenomenon, so I couldn't explain it, but the second was that all of them had some sort of practice of intentionally including traditionally excluded people. And for different communities, that meant different things. In some communities, where there had been a long history of a white power structure, it meant getting African Americans to the table and having them part of decision making. In other communities, it meant getting other types of labeled people to the table, physically handicapped, developmentally disabled. In other communities, it meant getting youth to the table. But they were all doing something that was intentionally reaching out to people who had been traditionally excluded. And that was changing the way their community worked. And those two things were the only two common denominators they could find amongst all these hundreds of communities they looked at where things were working. Here's a prettier version, isn't that nice? Part of this approach, you start with looking at the gifts of individuals. And if you want to build community, you spend time doing what we did at the beginning of this session. In 5 minutes, you started to know somebody based on what they liked to do, what they knew things about, clearly where they had spent some mental energy, and what they cared about. And the care part's important when we talk about getting things done, because people work on what they care about, not what they're told they're supposed to work on. And so by starting by working on gifts of individuals, you can really transform the way a community sees itself. This can happen in an evening. So at a Baptist church in Cincinnati, in a homeless shelter in the basement, tonight they just went and had everybody do this kind of thing and write down on flip charts their gifts, their interests, and they also asked them the question, what do you want to learn? And then they put them up all over the wall. And they went, who's volunteered in an overnight shelter before? So it's sort of the routine. People come in, you get the cot set up, and people kind of keep their distance a little bit. That was the case here until they did that. And then everybody kind of wanted to know, just like was referred to here, who's that person? That they sound kind of interesting. You know, he used to be a doctor. I'd like to talk to him. He plays the guitar. I want to learn how to play the guitar. So they started connecting people. It started changing people's images of themselves from homeless, which was a feature of themselves. They did not have a place to stay that was their home, to all the other things that they were as well. Then we find once you've done that, you certainly change the perspective. It becomes very positive. People start seeing, you guys mentioned possibilities, resources, things that can be connected. That's the next step, is connecting. But there's already all kinds of places in our communities that do connecting. We call them associations. This was first sort of highlighted by de Tocqueville, Democracy in America. People familiar with that? French guy comes over, runs around the United States in the 1800s. Comes out of a society at the time, France was very institutionally based, and his big observation was that there was no problem that came up that people didn't rush together to work together to fix long before consulting experts. He particularly talked about, you know, potholes in roads. They didn't wait for the authorities to decide this road, this pothole needed to be built, they just did it. People associated with each other, and then he talked a lot about the types of associations that people have created. Associations are simply places where people gather voluntarily out of a common interest. So can people think of any associations where people gather voluntarily out of a common interest?
Churches.
Churches. Right. Sometimes we refer to churches as institutions because we get institutional, but ultimately there might be a paid person or two or three, but the work is done by volunteers. Yeah.
Post-step groups.
Absolutely.
Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. Scouts.
Chamber.
Chambers
of Commerce.
Neighborhood associations.
Neighborhood associations.
Softball leagues.
Softball leagues.
Professional associations.
Professional associations.
PTA.
Book clubs. Right? People are coming together because they have a common interest. That's powerful. How many people have tried or been part of something in church where you try to get a committee or something going and it's just really hard to get people to come? Who's been part of it? Yeah, right. And for those of you who have had that experience, how many of you had decided prior to getting people to come what the committee was about? Who am I? Well, I'm up here. Like that shirt, what's that bell for? But you kind of knew before what it was supposed to be, and then you wanted to recruit people to it. What we found in community development is that we can go to existing associations and ask them, what else could you do? They're already together. They're already there. We do this. We're willing to do this with Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. We're willing to say, would you come, you know, put park benches in and things like that. But other groups can do other things. My favorite is, as you go up out of Sacramento on the highway, there's one of those signs that says who's either picking up the litter or paying for litter to pick up. And it's the Christian Motorcycle Riders Club of Amador County. So let's just think that through. This is a group of people who associate with each other because they share a common religious belief. They live in the same county, and they have a desire to ride around with a combustible engine between their legs. That's what brings them together. But it turns out that's not all they can do. It turns out this particular group is quite active in a number of things and makes things happen in their community. Some groups come together just for that purpose, Kiwanis, Rotary, things like that, for the purpose of service. So they're easy ones. But you can go to any group, because associations are where these gifts get amplified. So the leader of the Christian Motorcycle Riders Club of Amador County may not have known he was a good meeting facilitator, but eventually that became clear. So it's through our association. Again, if we're basing on gifts, if we start with them and say, okay, you know, what's everybody's problems here, then we're not going to get the gifts out. And it's going to be very hard to want to make all these connections. And then institutions we'll talk about more later this week, but they offer resources. Let's see. So in asset-based community development and in good community organizing that's not just about fighting an issue and then everybody going home, we generally find the gifts of communities in these six places. The talents and skills of individual people, associations and networks of relationships. And this one should be like underlined or something because it's really, really powerful. Institutions and professional entities. And so when some of you saw resources, what kind of resources were you seeing on that asset map?
Schools, libraries.
Hospitals.
And what do they have to offer? Besides their particular service that they're doing.
Meeting space.
Employment. Huge.
Recreation. Dissemination of information.
Right. They usually are filled with people who know stuff. So sometimes it's just a matter of rearranging. There's lots of hospitals in really poor neighborhoods. People come in, they go out. There's all this great expertise that could be really useful in the community. So a lot of times, community development is about rearranging these relationships so that these gifts can be offered and shared and connected instead of siloed out. Physical assets. Every community has them. Land, property, buildings, equipment. Sometimes the building might be closed up, might be boarded up. That doesn't mean it can't become something if the community wants to do something with it. Economic assets, huge, huge. Which is not just cash. Cash is just a symptom of the productive work of individuals. People can do things. So in Chicago, in a particular public housing complex where a community group took some of these asset inventories instead of needs assessment, they went in and did an asset inventory, asked people back to the gifts of individuals, what are you good at doing? What do you like to doing? What do you want to learn more about? And they found that many of the women in the public housing project were good at cooking. So started working with them. Some of them had worked in businesses and retail before. Some of them had worked in the hospitality industry, hotels, things like that before. And so they started bringing folks together and said, would you want to do something with this where you can earn some money? And that evolved, short story, or long story short, into a catering business, which then, with a little bit of marketing help, was promoted to the nonprofits in Chicago, and there's thousands of them. So when they had meetings and things, instead of hiring Applebee's to bring stuff, they would hire these women who would make incredible meals, homemade, for half the price. And that took off. And then pretty soon, executive directors were using them to cater to their board meetings, who had at them players, if you will, in the economy, bankers and others, who started, I mean, this became a very lucrative catering business. Before that, they were just single moms in public housing, until somebody said, what are you good at? What would you like to do that somebody might pay you to do?
I have a question. In that example, what was the name of their organization?
The community development organization we're talking about was Lawndale Community Development Corporation.
Like the catering company?
I don't remember the catering company in that one.
Because I'm just wondering if people hired them because they saw this need and they were helping these people, if they were kind of marketing off a deficit, basically.
Yeah, I think originally. And then they got the food and the milk. And both were favorable. There's currently, I hate the name, I'll get it for you later, but a similar model being used in the uptown neighborhood in Chicago, where it's actually a white tablecloth restaurant run by an organization that works with people who are coming out of different kind of addictions and things. And once they've gone through enough steps of things that they're functioning, they can work in the restaurant, so they pick up skills, but the restaurant's the place to go. It's hard to get into, make reservations at night, and they have huge demand for catering. The one piece they did, they hired a high-end professional chef out of one of the hotels who had some vision for the mission of the organization. But most people don't know that this restaurant is a program, if you will, of an agency that works with people who are coming out of addiction or abusive situations or homelessness and are learning skills. Most people just see it as a nice white tablecloth restaurant with really good food at more affordable prices than most places. So a lot of it's just finding some of those economic assets that exist. A lot of times they're latent, putting them together. And one we've started adding in the last few years is culture and stories. Clearly, so much of our communities we pass on through culture and stories, and those can be great assets for people to draw on, whether it's women drawing on stories of previous generations of women who made things happen against the odds, or people in particular ethnic groups, or sometimes just stories of neighborhoods. That's been an asset that people have dug into. So for today, this is kind of what asset-based community development's about. Does anybody have thoughts about how this relates or does not relate to church and congregations and to the promises of God? I'm going to block this so I can move without blinding myself.
In our church, we don't get to the point of finding out what our talents are. I mean, not like even as what you did here. This would be a good thing for our church to do. And there wouldn't be that many more people than what are here.
You mean just the conversation about?
Yeah, that would be a good thing for us to do instead of the Old Testament reading.
Well,
now
you got your son.
You know, I guess thought in my mind is we have one pastor that's retiring, another approaching, and so we're looking at, you know, the typical ministry assessment and then the call process, et cetera, et cetera. And we talked the other night about a memory member visit that, you know, for the first time in anybody's memory wouldn't be about money, but would be, you know, for a capital campaign or something, but could be around the ministry. And I would think this kind of a process would really fit in nicely.
Absolutely. Because you would get to know what the gifts of people are, that would allow prospective pastors to have a sense, can I work with these gifts? But
I was just going to talk about the most successful campus ministry program that I know of in the country is one where they have focused upon the gifts. It's similar to what you're talking about here, but the gifts of the people who come there have, and then organizing to do things around the gifts that they have, and developing those gifts and strengthening them. It's got a tremendous response.
Which campus ministry program is doing that?
That's the one at the University of North Dakota.
Very cool. Yeah, there's lots of ways congregations can use this to strengthen their own congregational community, to also welcome newcomers, and even more so than to relate to their community based on listening to what the community around them is interested in, instead of coming and saying, here's what we have to offer. So building a relationship before we start sharing our theology. You had
something. Yeah, I just want to say that as part of our annual stewardship campaign, we include, obviously the pledge form, but under that is a large piece where we ask people to identify their gifts and talents and the things they're passionate about, some of the things you've talked about, and that then becomes our base for helping develop our programs.
That's great.
Really successful.
So sort of open-ended.
Yes, just whatever it is, that you, whatever your gifts are, whatever your talents, what are you excited about, and it's been really useful.
Yeah, that's
the challenge is to coordinate that and get the information disseminated. We're struggling with that, but at least we're at that step.
Yeah, my pet peeve is those lists that say, here's the things we need people to do. Check if you can do one of those. Because what that also says, if I don't do or want to do any of these things, I don't have anything to contribute. I love the open-ended, because it says, just tell us what you have to contribute or what you want to. Maybe there's things I want to contribute in my church community, and maybe there's things that's not a place I really want to spend time on that gift. By Sunday, I'm done with that. There's lots of ways this can be used in congregations very powerfully. Real quick, as we finish, there's I have some resources up here of books that have like the tools on how to do this. You don't have to invent this. Jody's Green Book is in the bookstore. It has lots of these kind of asset inventories and stuff. One of the best books that's come out that has tools to do those kind of listening campaigns and stuff is this one, Asset-Based Community Development, When People Care Enough to Act. talks a lot about moving the next step. Once you find out people's gifts and what they care about, then what do you do? How do you, you know, this doesn't fit in the database. So,
what's it called again, Ron?
When people care enough to act, to find out what people care enough about to act on, by Mike Green, who's worked a lot with Jody and John. For those of you who are interested in neighborhoods stuff, Neighborhood Power by Jim Deers, who was the community development director, I think, in the city of Seattle for years, totally did it a different way, was and still sort of legendary in the League of Cities, building community the Seattle way.
Neighborhood Forever,
what
was that?
Neighborhood Power. This one just came out. It's John McKnight, who I referred to earlier, works with Jody Kretzmann, with Peter Block. People may be familiar with his work. The most famous is The Answer to How is Yes. They wrote The Abundant Community. It came out about 2 months ago. Awakening the Power of Families and Neighborhoods. Churches are mentioned there a lot. So over the next few days we talk about this, we'll have to talk about some hard things, like when service hurts, which we have kind of alluded to a little bit in the needs map. Why churches should become fluent in power. Whether or not Paul was a community organizer. And the concept of leading from behind instead of leading from the front. And then finally, I think where I see this overlap is with asset-based community development churches is in something Bob quoted in his Bible study this morning about what the glory of God means. I'm going to let you.
It's a quote from a second century Christian thinker who said that the glory of God is a human person fully alive.
So if the glory of God is the human person fully alive, which is fairly quick summary of my theology, then as we bring human persons together in community, as Christians, we're called to make the community fully alive. And I just don't know how to do that without starting with what's already alive in those individuals in those communities and working from there, not ignoring that there are problems and needs deficits, just like there are in all of us. But I've never seen a need solve a problem. I have seen gifts help needs become less powerful. So thanks for coming. Sorry, I'm a couple minutes over.